Hello and welcome to another episode of How to Save the World, a sustainability podcast for people who are trying to do the right thing and might not know how to yet, including us.
Yeah, actually.
I'm Tim Batt.
I'm Waveney Worth.
And what are we talking about today, Wave?
Microplastics.
Fantastic.
I am amped, as usual, after I've just spent a couple of days in my head researching all of this. I'm now convinced it's one of the most important things we could possibly be talking about.
Okay.
It is usually the state I get myself into, but microplastics.
Okay, well, can I start with the basics?
What it is?
What is a microplastic?
What is it? Well, so plastics don't biodegrade, and so they just stick around and they break down and they get fragmented by wind or waves or whatever, sunlight, and eventually they just end up really, really small. Which is a microplastic.
So tiny little bits
of
plastic.
Yeah, just anything less than 5 millimetres. And I'm including, just for the sake of clarity, anything, including the nanoparticles.
Gotcha.
So that gets tiny. What colour do you, because you've heard of these before, right? Microplastic.
I have, what, from you.
What, is that all?
No, from other places too.
always checking the bubble. What colour do you think of them as?
Kind like of see through,
yes, without the, thinking. Just
like see in my head, they're little see through, like kind of when you, I don't know, bleach like an ice cream container or something.
Have check this out. We're going to have to explain this to our listeners.
A full color printout of microplastics at different sizes, and they're actually quite beautiful when you view them like this.
They're really colourful.
Very colourful.
Like little microscopic rainbows.
They look like gemstones.
Yeah, they do. Well, actually, that's because some of those samples are actually glitter.
Glitter's
the new party pooper thing to avoid.
So we've got like a kind of fluorescent green. There's a lot of yellows. There's a pink.
And they're all different shapes and sizes. So they're actually like snowflakes. They're all unique. That's a scientific fact. And then they've all got totally different compositions going on as well. And the other thing about it, I think we often have this thing with plastic that it's inert. It's just not really doing much.
Yeah.
It's just sitting there.
It's sitting there. But it's like it can't break down, so therefore it's just sitting around.
Yeah, therefore it's not doing anything. But there's two things going on. Microplastic absorbs chemical contaminants. It sort of is just this little empty habitat waiting. And so it absorbs pesticides, hydrocarbons, heavy metals, and other things. But then it's also somehow, simultaneously, leaching the additives, the original additives that it had as well. And they're often a little bit harmful.
Yeah.
Or very harmful, depending on what they are as well. So there's actually a lot going on with these little guys.
Because most plastics are, or maybe all plastics are petrochemicals, so these are bad things to be just rocking around in the water.
Yeah, that's right. Classic case of we think it's gone away because we can't see it.
Yeah.
But we're gonna cover off in this episode where it all comes from, a bit of a different breakdown, what's happening in the oceans and on the land, and then looking at how much of it there is and what the big deal is, and then we'll get into some solutions.
At the risk of changing the order a little bit of what you've got in your head, can I just ask overall, because you have been in this research bubble
microcosm,
looking into it for a while, how big a problem is this broadly? Is this a big deal?
This is a big deal, Tim. It's everywhere, microplastic. So that's one thing that the scientists have discovered, is that it is literally everywhere. They've done studies indoor, outdoor, in the marine environment. It's in bottled drinking water. It's in our food. Highest mountain top, deepest ocean trench, Antarctica, Arctic.
It sounds like a riddle.
In our lungs. Yeah, true. What is? Yeah, so it's everywhere, and it's, I mean, even so, these scientists are just researching the crap out of this, and it's in all stool samples from people that they've tested.
All. Everyone's pulling the stuff out.
Yep. And this is quite horrendous. Someone has worked out that we consume about 2,000 little pieces of plastic a week, which is about the equivalent of a credit card.
Whoa.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, so some of those bits must be quite big.
Yeah, that's more than I would have thought.
Yeah, yeah. And we poo out most of that, but some of it doesn't make it out.
Uh-oh.
And we, in terms of scale, like until recently we thought that there were probably about 10 microplastic bits per cubic meter of ocean water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's new research out showing that we've very seriously underestimated that. So going from 10
yeah.
up to 8.3 million pieces.
What the? How, we got that very, very
that was
wrong.
Very, very wrong.
From 10 pieces to over 8 million.
Yeah.
In a,
yeah.
Did you say in a cubic
meter? Cubic meter of ocean water.
Oh,
and no. It turns out that the world's soil, so the research is really focused on the marine environment.
Yes.
But it turns out the world's soil contains far more microplastics in the oceans.
Dang.
There you go. How's that for a bit of boom?
Well, not great.
Anyway, we know why we're talking about it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's this thing that didn't even exist like 100 years ago and now is completely everywhere on Earth.
Yep, yep. It's affecting really basic life systems, which I'll get into a little bit later mm-hmm. in the So What's the Big Deal section of the podcast.
Cool.
But it's like, yeah, because it's so small, it can, it's interacting on these, all of these levels that we're, scientists are really at that stage of still trying to quantify it, and all of the research is quite new. So most of the findings are indicative of all these different things that could be problems. Yeah. But so where does it all come from?
Yeah.
I hear you ask.
And that is my question. How to get there?
So there's couple of different, there's basically two categories. One is the stuff that's actually designed to be a microplastic. So that would be your pre-production plastic pellets, which is just, that's how plastic's transported all over the world. And I've seen those heaps on the beaches. Do you know, that's probably where your...
You mean the little white ones?
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably your little stereotype, mine too, yeah. actually, of what microplastic is. And so that's pretty big. And then the micro beads used in cosmetics, they're all designed as well to be microplastic right from the start, but they've been banned in New Zealand. Do you remember that?
A couple of years ago,
which is really cool. And then the secondary microplastics are actually things that are just breaking down from larger items, and that is by far the bigger source. So we've got, this is recent research from Aotearoa. Oh, I forgot to do my shout out right from the start. Is that a lot of this research has come from the Wasteman's webinar on microplastics with Dr. Olga Pantos and Grant Northcutt, both leading scientists on microplastics in New Zealand, and consolidating a lot of research from other New Zealand scientists. So just fantastic to have that resource. Thanks heaps, guys. We've got, in Aotearoa, we've got building materials as a big contributor. Like, just basically anyone using plastic. And until recently, that was quite overlooked. There's road dust turns out to be really significant.
Road dust becomes microplastic.
So, when you think about it, road marking, like, what happens to that? It wears off. But it's like, where does it go? Tires, they wear down. Where does that go? Anything orange, like all of the road working stuff, all of the litter, especially plastic drink bottles, apparently, it all ends up in urban waterways. Then this is another crazy big one. Washing your clothes.
Yeah, I remember.
Could
you
actually be one of the most significant things, as the fibers, even like the prints or the glitter or whatever, just or synthetic carpet, all of those, anything that's not natural. We sort of wash it and it ends up going down the into the wastewater treatment plant, and their processes aren't designed to, when they were designed they weren't thinking about microplastic, and they do have filters, and a lot of it gets caught, but a lot of it isn't getting caught. And in Auckland, in the Manukau Harbour, there could be other reasons for this, but they've sampled microplastics on the east coast and the west coast, and there are three times more microplastic in that Manukau Harbour where the wastewater treatment plant is. So it could be that that is just really densely populating that area with microplastic
because out of places like the washing.
Yes.
Synthetic fibres.
Well, yeah, even going back further than that, it's because we've gone to the mall, we've bought a thing, it looks cool, and it's not a natural fibre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or we bought the synthetic carpet because it wears better and it doesn't stain or whatever.
How does the carpet get into the water, though?
Vacuuming. Like, what do you do?
Oh, yeah, true.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're not instantly putting into the water. That's a good point.
But it's around.
It's around. And yeah. It's so microplastics are so small, they'll get airborne as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So out of all of that, food production's another one. Just farming practices like sheet, anything to do with plastic in that agricultural environment.
What I'm thinking of? Cling film.
At home.
Glad wrap, yeah. Yeah. Sandwich bags, yeah. All of
yeah.
that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the single-use stuff.
That's right. Yeah, it does. Especially if you can change your time frame a little bit. You think, I can't see how that would break down, especially if I do put it in the rubbish or something. But ultimately, if you extend your time frame out, none of this stuff survives. It will all become microplastic in the end. Even if it gets recycled, sort of magic unicorn recycling, it will still be plastic when it's recycled into something else, and eventually that will break down. So about 90% of all of that stuff I mentioned comes from just three sources. 35% of it is synthetic textiles, so our clothing. 28% of it is from tires. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Almost a third of all microplastics is from tyres.
That's crazy.
And then, I think it's crazy that a third's from our clothing, a third's from tyres, more or less. Yeah. And this is just for the marine environment. I think it's quite a similar profile for terrestrial. And then what the third category is city dust, which would be a...
that's like a big old misc.
Everything. Yeah, that's misc. Yep, totally. Yeah, so there you go. That's where it all comes from.
I can't believe so much of it is from tyres.
I know. That's a hard one to solve too.
Yeah.
I think that's, what is that, just drive less?
It doesn't feel like there's a huge, there's not really, we don't have an alternative for tyres.
No, other than drive less. Like, because it's like, what is it, the R&D that people just need to keep on doing, and working out public transport solutions, like big picture, big system.
Public transport is the thing, isn't it? Because if you've got less tyres there, transporting the same number of people, that's less. Yeah.
But short of these massive changes, it's like it comes just back down to the stuff we say over and over in this podcast of just, it's so precious, all of this stuff. We're running around. I mean, when I say we, I should say me. We're just all running around like, oh, I'm just driving here or there, and got a bit of a carbon footprint. Oh, I shouldn't be doing that. We do it anyway with maybe a bit of a guilty conscience. And it's just like it all keeps doubling down and adding up, like whatever topic we're covering. It's always the same outcomes. Drive less, you know, eat less crap, buy less crap. Anyway.
Synthetic blends in clothes. The one good thing about that is you can, like, that's all labelled. You can have a look on your t-shirt label and see if it's, you know, what material it's made of.
Yeah, and do you know where to look? Because I do this, I'm really good at it. No, it's not the collar, it's the side. The label's always on the side, yeah. Ah. And it's stitched into the side seam.
Right.
Yeah. Should we talk about what the big deal is?
Yeah, why?
I mean, like, obviously it is a big deal, but let's talk about actually, you know, ask the why.
Yeah.
Like, sure, it's everywhere, that just seems intrinsically bad.
So here's this thing that we've got over 8 million parts of per cubic meter of water in the ocean. We're putting a whole bunch of it into the harbour in Auckland. It's everywhere. Comes from our tyres. Comes from our clothes. Does it matter?
Yes, it does matter. And sorry, it was such a lovely segue, but now I'm ruining it, because I just wanted to say that in Wellington, a different bunch of scientists looked at what was going on there, and they found, like in Auckland, it was mostly the textile fibres. In Wellington, it was this huge amount of those little pre-industrial pallets, right, for plastic manufacturing. And so they were like, this doesn't seem right. And they traced it up Oriental Bay to where all these plastic manufacturers were, and they weren't following the guidelines on how to store stuff, and there were plastic pallets everywhere. And
whoa.
Yeah, and so they were actually really cooperative, is my understanding, when they realised what the outcome was of them being a bit sloppy, and they've changed their practices.
The science works.
Yeah, go scientists. So, right, here we are segueing into what the big deal is. So we know what happens with big plastic. That's had some pretty good PR. Turtles choke, clogs up in your gut.
Dolphins get trapped in bear rings.
Yes. So there's entanglement, I think is the proper term for that, and death. So actually the same stuff happens with microplastics for the smaller organisms. So like when worms eat a little bit of microplastic or bacteria, it's the same as them. It has that same physical effect of eating a plastic bag. And then for larger organisms like fish and us, actually, the plastic can get through the gut lining and into our bodies, and it can get into our organs, and it's just small enough to get everywhere and bioaccumulate. Whoa. Yeah.
Gets through our gut lining.
Yes, it can get through our gut lining.
That's not good.
And so, and then, so that's the sort of the problems with the physicality mm-hmm. of it. But then there's the associated toxins, which I mentioned before, that all the time the chemicals that have been added to get them to perform to do different things, they're not actually chemically bound. They can leach quite easily, and heaps of them are toxic. And then there's those harmful microorganisms that are just very quick, very ready to colonize the surface, and they can be transporting toxins and pathogens as they move their way through.
Wow.
Little things getting eaten by bigger things, and these things are accumulating as they go. So, should we have a bit of a rundown on what's happening in the oceans?
Some like
of
a little toxic bomb roaming around.
It's pretty crazy, I think. And again, like just to stress that a lot of the research is quite young. And so what they're doing is they've got findings, and they need to be backed up by more peer researched.
So what is happening in the oceans? Because that's the one that I always hear about, microplastics in the sea.
So there's photosynthetic bacteria in the ocean, which sounds important, right? And it is. It's one of the major species that contribute over 50% of the oxygen to the atmosphere. And it's getting hammered by its uptake of microplastic. It's affecting its ability to photosynthesize. So that's a big deal.
This is a bacteria?
It's a photosynthetic bacteria in the ocean.
It's turning sunlight into oxygen, and it's being choked out by plastics.
Yep.
Shit.
And some sea creatures are just dying when they ingest it. Others have their behavior changed, and that's behavior that they need to survive, like being cautious or...
Wow, do you know what that's down to? Are they trying to adapt to the new environment, or is it basically poisoning their brains?
No, it's more something going on in the neural...
Like a neurotoxin situation.
And what else have we got? The pathogen survival rate is increasing through water treatment plants, because the microplastics are actually providing the pathogens a home. That's an interesting one, eh?
Because you've kind of brought this up a couple of times already. So to me, this is the picture I've got in my head. I'm zoomed in. It's microscopic, right? But it's a little tiny piece of microplastic. But it's in my head, it's like a sphere. And as it's starting to break down, it becomes almost sort of a little bit porous, and like it's got holes on it. And when you got something that looks like that, that's often something that harmful bacterial pathogens will hide inside of. It's like, well, you don't want to keep crockery that's got cracks in it, because that's where you get all the germs.
Yeah, and I think on that level it might just be quite textured anyway.
Yeah,
when you zoom down enough, because we're talking at a microscopic level anyway.
But you're providing this kind of rough surface area for pathogens to live.
I think also because anything else already is just this really, like us, and anything alive is already a really complex, well evolved little petri dish. It's already got lots of bacteria in that space. So I guess it's just like, ooh, empty thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the most alarming things, apart from the oxygen thing, I think, is how far the microplastics are getting into that very foundational biota of the food chain, and how it's sort of getting passed up and up. I find that alarming.
Yeah. Well, we're starting with the building blocks. If it's affecting the bacteria that's transforming sunlight into oxygen, like if we're starting there, it's like on a plankton kind of level, you know, the underpinning of all marine life
on land.
Yeah,
there is a growing body of evidence that's indicating that microplastics are actually messing with the soil microbes, flora and fauna that provide essential ecosystem services. So that means microplastics are affecting soil density and structure, soil's ability to hold water and make nutrients available and pollinate plants. So as an example of that is that microplastics are accumulating in the spores of the seed capsules and because of that, reducing germination rates.
Whoa. So they're actually like interrupting all these natural processes
now,
for even plants doing their thing.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And basically, the scientists are flagging it. They're saying, look, we need to do more research, but we are putting our hands up to say that there seems to be an emerging global change happening that would be resulting in a threat to our terrestrial ecosystems.
That's such a huge scale.
It is.
It seems so, in my head, it's almost like a nuclear winter, you know? It's this little harmful dust particles that are just screwing every natural process up.
Yeah, but in such a, well, so far, you know, and again, people could argue with me and say, no, it's not invisible, but it kind of is in that sense of just the everydayness of our lives.
Yeah.
We're not really seeing it, even though, you know, people are observing the impacts of it, but. Yeah, it doesn't have the drama of a nuclear fallout, that's for sure.
Yes.
At this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's just this thing that's been creeping up on us since the 50s. And
which is quite insidious.
Action time. Yeah. They did a study in China, which is very specific, but it's good to throw a couple of specific things. And they looked at lettuces, and they found that a lettuce would uptake particles that are up to 0.2 of a millimetre big. Which is kind of big.
What does that mean, uptake?
Like, as in, there'll be microplastic in the soil, and then they can test the leaves, and there it is in the leaf.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That was how big?
0.2 of a millimetre.
Yikes. So that's, like, almost visible.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it might even be. Yeah. I wonder. Yeah. Maybe if I had good young eyes. And the other thing is that we don't know how it affects the a persistence of pesticides and synthetic fertilizers in the soil, because all of the study has been what happens to those things in kind of a natural soil.
That's such a good point, because there has to be an interaction between these nitrogen-based fertilizers and these plastics that we're putting in there.
Yeah,
these two inorganic chemicals.
Exactly. We know that the plastic will attract the toxins and they provide a home for it.
What it's like with the lettuce thing is it's like the earth is serving us back up this disgusting thing we've given it.
Yeah, I've noticed when I was researching this that I was starting to get a little bit like anti-microplastics, like they were the problem, like this awful little thing, this evil, ghastly thing. Yeah. And then I was just like, what am I even, you know, it's not this other foreign object that's just appeared, it's us.
Yeah,
it's just us. It's just everything about the way I live.
Chemicals are chemicals.
It's not even, exactly, it's just actually, it's not a baddie, it's just a thing, it's just a particle, and it's me driving around.
Exactly, and, it's doing some very bad stuff, but that is due to how humans are using them.
Mm. Human health. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
It's a bit of an arbitrary line because we've just talked about how it affects everything and all these living organisms. But there's two main routes to human exposure, which is ingestion and then inhalation, because unfortunately it's all through our ear as well. So there are some good long-term studies emerging underway. Netherlands is cranking on, and we do have some good research from mammalian studies. Did you get that? Mammals.
Oh, mammalian.
Yeah. I don't know if I said that right. So in other words, they've been testing and can see that microplastics can affect lymphatic and circulatory systems. They can accumulate in organs and impact on the immune system and cell health, and may increase inflammation, which raises questions about the role of microplastics in chronic inflammatory diseases. And
like ankylosing spondylitis.
What?
Ankylosing spondylitis.
Tim.
I don't know if I'm saying that right. I think I am. I know a couple of people with it. It's very debilitating.
Ah.
It's like a lifelong pain thing.
Gosh.
And affects your bones, your whole skeletal system.
Well, I mean, and this is a thing. We don't know. Scientists are looking into it to see how much of this is connected to microplastics. And this is quite a crazy one too, is that they may also facilitate the spread of the antibiotic-resistant genes. Which, when you think about it, makes perfect sense, because there's now this little vehicle inside of us. It's like you've got an antibiotic-resistant gene that has now suddenly found its little home in the microplastic. I've got a source for this. I will chuck it in the show notes.
Cool.
There you go.
So before we talk about solutions, because you know that crazy book I read about the health of oceans and how it's very, very bad?
Yes. That was that woman who you emceed for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, it was after that experience that you decided to, we needed to do the good news episodes, because you were so depressed by this woman's lecture and reading the book that you were like, this is too much. We need to, what's the name?
I was overwhelmed. It's called Seasick.
Good name.
Yeah. But she was, so that book came out in 2009, and she talked a lot about the deoxygenation of the ocean and how massive that problem is and how it's affecting all marine life. And it sounds like microplastics could be a big contributor to that problem.
Yeah.
If not, maybe the main culprit, perhaps.
Who knows? I mean, crikey, there's so much going on, right? So complex. Actually, that is something, just as we do start talking about solutions, it is definitely something to keep in mind. It's like, I just don't think it ever works to go, oh, microplastics are a big problem, right? What we need now is bioplastics or whatever. And it's just like, it is just so complicated. We just need to stop and assess the whole thing and then find out that actually, it's the same simple actions over and over again that make a difference. Because the other big thing that's going on in the oceans is how they're acidifying, because there's too much carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the air. So the ocean, as it sinks, it is changing the acidity. And it's like, how did all of that get there? It got too much driving and all that stuff. So same issue with the tyres and the microplastic. It's just, so we just don't need quick fixes of one particular problem,
or
you know,
crazy,
we need to
novel,
step back.
Scientific,
yeah,
you know,
I'm
invent
really
a new thing.
Not a big fan. It's like, I can see that there will be and there are some amazing innovations that really will make life a lot easier and help to really soften the blow for us as we transition. But I guess we can't, I want to celebrate that, but it can't be at the expense of us going, oh great, we just have to wait for the scientists to fix some stuff and then I can just carry on being
humans
wasteful.
Have historically had an amazing ability to oversimplify nature and all its processes and be super confident.
We are still confident. It's nuts. So my number one solution is, I've got four of them. Number one is just use less plastic. That's it. Like, I was in the bakery the other day and I was watching the guy put my bread in. There's plastic bags and bread, brown paper bags sitting there. And I was just like, oh, I'm just watching to see which one he'll grab. And he grabbed the plastic bag and he said, oh, excuse me, can I have the brown paper? And he said, sure. And I said, hey, just out of interest, why don't you just grab the paper one as a default? And he said, oh, because customers prefer the plastic. And I was like, still, it's like, come on, I know that 95% of New Zealanders are into this. We're saying we're into it, but it's, and I was like, oh, why is that? And he said, oh, because it keeps the bread fresher. It's like, we've got such a low threshold.
That doesn't even sound right to me, because the bread would sweat in there if it's plastic.
Yeah,
or something like paper that's a little bit semi-porous, so you can get, you know.
And it's just not this benign, handy, cheap solution, is it, to keeping your bread fresh? It's like millions of particles that are just going to break down and persist in the environment for hundreds of years, and they're going to risk the foundation of life and the health of the next generation.
True. All right, take a sip of water, Wave. But that's such a good way to conceptualize your plastic use, is that instead of looking at a plastic bag as a plastic bag, looking at it as a collection of future microplastic particles, like a big lump of stuff that's going to be floating around in the air and the ocean and the soil in tiny dispersed parts.
Yeah, and it's all of us. It's like the home stuff. It's not just buying. It's not just your shopping, you know. It's like I was saying before, you're like your clothing or your plastic chopping boards even. Just like anything plastic. If you can buy, I will always buy wooden or stainless steel alternatives to things where I can. But it's farmers, it's roading contractors, it's hospitals, it's schools. You know how they laminate, how everyone laminates? It's like fast food, it's the supermarkets with the choices that they can make around better packaging. There's just no exceptions.
Do you know what another one will be? Coffee cups.
Yeah.
Because of the plastic laminate that you have to put on it to keep it waterproof. Or disposable,
single-use
plastic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and cups. To me, that's such a nice, easy one. Just grab a keep cup, you know. A glass one or a metal one or a ceramic one.
Or a mug that you have at home.
Yeah, just a good old mug. You can add glitter to your party pooper. I won't say that again. You can add glitter to your party pooper list of things that you're never going to do again.
Glitter's supposed to be quite bad, huh?
Well, yeah, because it's bad in the sense that all microplastics are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a bit more high profile.
So, like a lot of things that we talk about, not a silver bullet, sexy, glamorous solution, but just being conscious of the fact that, hey, you know that plastic you're using, that is future microplastic.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is poisoning every living environment on Earth.
Yeah, no magic bullets, but I do actually have a few specific things as well that I think, if in case I've overwhelmed anyone, but the next sort of thing before I get into a nice specific thing, I'm just going to get worse and say just use less of everything, mm-hmm. because plastic can be we think of it in quite a specific way, but like the furniture that we buy, turns out that the additives that they've found in the microplastics, there's about 100 that they've found so far, and just over half of them come from just three things. And these flame retardants are an enormous category, and that's just from furniture, from foam and from bedding.
Right.
And the irony is that furniture's so flammable, isn't it? But anyway.
Well, still. Apparently not. If it's made of flame retardant, fine.
I've talked to firefighters who are just like, those polyester couches you're sitting on, they are ready to go.
Huh.
Anyway, so again, just thinking about before you just run off and buy something, is there anything else you can do? Can we be going back to see our upholsterers? You know, there still are some of them around. So specific stuff we can do. Go clear the colorants and... plastics are actually a really big deal.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. That's such a good, easy one.
Yeah. So
if you have to use plastic, yep. don't get a coloured plastic.
Yep. Yeah. Go clear if you can. It's a classic example would be milk. You can make a good choice for that. And a lot of things as well. You can make choices around that. So any marine biologist will be able to look at that chemical structure of some of the colourants that they put in and just can see straight away from that it's toxic to marine life. Buy natural clothing, kind of mentioned that. So that's wool, cotton, linen, hemp. And just a bit of a shout out there to previous episodes we've done around buying organic where you can.
Yeah.
Which sort of just instantly gets hard. So that's where I default to trying to buy secondhand. At least you're not flaming the problem, fanning the flames. And here's a really nice specific one. And that is, this is actually, probably, in terms of we've had a few mind-blowing stats this episode, this could be up there. In fact, this might be my pick for the most mind-blowing one. Ditch your bottled drinking water.
Yes.
Because if you... Amen. So if you are... Because the thing about it is that they often pitch it as a more healthy thing. If you're only drinking tap water, they're estimating you're probably consuming about 4,000 microplastic particles annually. Okay, 4,000 annually. If you're only drinking bottled water, you could be ingesting an additional... 90,000.
Dang. From trying to do the math on that.
4,000 just from all of the consumption of everything. About 15
times the amount.
Yeah. And that's not 4,000 from drinking water. That's 4,000 from everything that you're ingesting.
Oh, wow. So your total intake
goes up by 15 times. Yeah.
Man, the marketing on bottled water has got to be one of the most successful ways of tricking us into the stupidest idea, particularly in New Zealand.
Yes. We've got such good water here. Wait, have you seen that war on plastics on TV?
No.
They've done a really cool thing where, well, they've done lots of cool things, really worth checking that series out, guys. One of the things they did was, this dude who's like probably in his 40s or 50s, he went to a makeover stylist who made him look like this, I don't know, cool hipster. He like even had iron-on tattoos and stuff. And he went down to like a busy mall with bottled water, plastic drinking water, and got everyone to try it and was like, oh, it's the new cool thing. And he was getting everyone, you know, it was just such a setup. But people were going, wow, it's really great. It's really good. And he's like, oh, do you drink bottled water? And yeah. Do you drink tap water? Oh, no. And anyway, it was just tap water.
Of course.
And, you know, so it's just, it's so much in our heads.
It's all, and yeah, that stuff is like pure marketing.
Mm.
It's crazy. Okay.
And then the last thing I just want to finish on, a bit of a shout out to like the legendary woman we've had on our podcast, Robin Malcolm, Sophie Hanford from School Strikes for Climate, Erica Finney, who we just had from 350, all saying same message, is act collectively,
yes.
Get involved, get political. we actually need global legally binding treaties to tackle this problem. So we've got a bit of a legal framework globally here and there, but it's totally ineffective and it's really fragmented. And countries like New Zealand, we don't have a lot of mandatory stuff. So we need to sort of really coordinate some international action. And WWF, the World Wildlife Foundation, they're calling on people to really begin negotiating as soon as possible to create something that would be legally binding to tackle the marine plastic pollution problem, which would in turn actually tackle a lot of the other issues, because it's all generated on the land. It just, a lot of it ends up in the marine environment. So one way New Zealanders can make their voices heard and have a bit of fun, such a cool organisation, is to connect with Plastic Diet. I hung out with these guys like in their early years, and I just checked them out and I was just like, wow, like talk about leaps and bounds. So check out yourplasticdiet.org. It's a youth-led organisation, Aotearoa based, and they're working collaboratively with WWF, and they are, among other amazing things, leading a petition with, and so far they've got over 1.5 million signatures.
Whoa, to yeah. create a legal
yeah,
framework.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And you can do, so check them out. Really cool information. You can check out your own plastic consumption. You can get involved. You can find local groups. I spoke with these guys, when would it have been, like 2012, 13, and I remember they were saying, we want to do stuff on a national, like we want to really try and stop plastic at its source. And I remember thinking, good luck with that. Yeah. And it's just like so cool to see them, 2020, just like actually they're right in the right space. They've always been focused on that high level change and they're doing it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That's so exciting. So cool. Yeah.
Well, that's great. I feel like, are there any other solutions you want to go through?
There are no other solutions.
I feel like I'm very armed in terms of, I now know this is a huge problem everywhere, that we're all contributing to it in ways big and small. The solutions are kind of like surprisingly straightforward, from taking the bus to, if you need to get something plastic, make sure it's not coloured, to don't use a goddamn disposable coffee cup.
No excuses.
Of course. And no bottled water, you jerk. You don't need to pay $4 for that. Bring a drink bottle, get a drink bottle. And then we can also all join together online. So is it yourplasticdiet.org?
Yes.
Sweet. Even, and they're in New Zealand, they're sort of like New Zealand originated, yes. But now they're so powerful, they're like a global force to be reckoned with.
A conglomerate.
That's so cool.
That's so cool.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for doing the research, Wave. Both terrifying, but also kind of uplifting that people are both doing the research to actually find out, you know, start to measure how big this problem really is and what its offshoots are, and giving us some solutions on what we can do to stop
and
this.
And same old, those solutions, it's just, we literally need to step through a bit of a portal. Mm. It's like the same little simple cluster of actions around just being a bit more a lot more mindful of what we're buying. Buying local, buying plastic free, trying to find your food without plastic packaging.
All this stuff that the insufferable hippies have been saying for 20 years.
I know.
Unfortunately, turns out they were right.
Damn it.
Hey, well, thanks, Wave.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been good. I've enjoyed it. And I hope it's been helpful for people to sort of get a bit of a lowdown on microplastics globally and specifically what's happening in NZ.
And as always, you can also help by sharing this episode and this podcast with people who you think might be interested. Leave us a review if you can. It costs you nothing, but it helps other people see the show and find it online. So that's great. But otherwise, we will see you in the next episode of How to Save the World.
Goodbye.